How you doing, wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast, the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. This episode is no exception. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time, and now we relive those moments right here on this podcast. Joining me, as always, the renowned pro wrestling journalist, former managing editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and so many other landmark newsstand magazines, Mr. Bob Smith. Bob, how are you today?
I am hanging in there, John. It's great to be back, and we got a slobber knocker tonight.
We do have a slobber knocker tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun, and this was one that we were looking forward to getting into, and here it is. We're going to be covering what happened on Pro Wrestling Spotlight on May 31st, 1992, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Our editor for the show is here, direct from the province of Quebec in the city of Montreal, Canada, Mr. Jay Farrar. How you doing, Jay?
Gentlemen, great to be with you once again. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Question for you. Are you a soccer fan? How big is soccer up in Montreal?
It's the fastest growing sport, to tell you the truth. We have a large immigrant population, and you know, they bring the beautiful game with them. It's not exactly known for its North American roots. And we have an MLS club.
I saw it last night here in Nashville.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
That's why I was asking. I never went to a soccer match before.
Yeah. They used to be called the Montreal Impact. Now they're called CF Montreal.
Yes.
Club de Football Montréal.
Yeah. I mean, what an incredible experience it is to go to a soccer game. And I did feel like I was not in this country anymore. I mean, it was just kind of exciting. And the Nashville team, which they opened up a brand new stadium here, 30,000 seater. Yep. It was a beautiful night last night. Nashville defeated Montreal 2-1. I mean, it was unlike anything I ever experienced as a sports fan, because there were fans chanting, there was a band playing, there were drums, there was all of this pomp and circumstance that I was not really accustomed to. And it's kind of addicting, even though I don't know the rules, all the rules, but it was kind of an interesting experience. And when I saw they were playing Montreal, I didn't even know till I got there. I thought of you right away, and I was going to ask you that question.
I'm sorry we lost. We couldn't beat Nashville. And yes, it's a great experience here, too. We have a stadium called Saputo Stadium, about 25,000. Mm-hmm. And they built it, ironically enough, right in back of Olympic Stadium. So it's almost attached to Olympic Stadium near the tower where the Montreal Expos used to play. This stadium is working, however, not like the toilet bowl that we built in 1976 for the Olympics. Saputo Stadium works well. It's because it's open air and the fans don't mind. You know, it gets a little cool here in Montreal in the spring and in the autumn. They play throughout the summer and so forth, and they go until November, but the fans show up. It's a lot of fun. You're right.
Is it drawing in your towns, guys? Nashville?
Yes.
It drew pretty well.
Yep. Yeah, they pretty much fill up the stadium most of the year. Like I said, when it gets a little cooler, you know, less people will show up, fewer people will show up. But you know, during playoff time and you know, in the height of summer, it's a great place to be, like John says.
Yeah, it was I guess about 70 to 80% filled last night here in town, and
which is good for MLS. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was they support the team, and it was a big deal to get the stadium open, and it's here now. And my attorney invited me to the game, and I went, and it was cool, and I had a lot of fun. But just wanted to touch base with you. And also, we did have one of our patrons comment on you, Jay. DJ Danielson sent a message. And he was saying, I'm a couple of episodes behind, just finishing Zinc now. More contributions from Jay, please. Insightful questions from someone who wasn't there for the original show, a different perspective, and very valuable to the conversation. So there you go.
Thank you so much for that.
Got at least one fan out there, huh?
I'll take it. That was great. Thank you so much. I enjoy the show so much, and I've always got so many questions for you guys, and I'm always happy to come on in and give a perspective from a point of view of a guy who was much, much younger back in those days.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. But, you know, Bob and I would be more than happy to. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I think it's great to have a different perspective through younger eyes, because basically one of the things I've been trying to do is get younger people to listen to the show, not just people who were there when John originally broadcast the shows, but people who may be wondering about what it was like back in the 90s in professional wrestling. And I think this is a great place to come to learn about it.
Well, I'm so curious, because you guys can remember at a time, especially here in Montreal, we didn't have access to these kind of radio shows that you were doing in New York that really explored the inner circle of professional wrestling. To us, kayfabe was so wrapped up tightly, and there was a code, and we could never get the inside scoop on what was going on with these wrestlers. The only way we would know whether a wrestler was defecting to WCW or to NWA or AWA was they would show up on TV, and then all of a sudden they would be there. So to get that inside scoop at a time where I was a young lad, you know, in the early 90s, I was just reaching my teenage years, and I was watching wrestling at the time. And to us, it was so inaccessible, the backstage view of it. To hear this stuff in retrospect now is completely fascinating to me, from a guy who the only access we had to it was watching it, you know, every week at noon on Saturday afternoon. That was the only time we could ever see what was going on. So now seeing what was going on behind the scenes and the inner workings of it is fascinating to me.
Well, you make a great point about the code.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and John, I think you're indirectly responsible for some of this, in that 91, 92, the code started to crack right about then, between the newsletters, things like your show, the news, the steroid scandals, everything else. The old school code that Jay just talked about, the, you know, kayfabe-ish cocoon of professionally started to erode at that point. You agree with that, John? Or?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of our Facebook members of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast and radio show private group, Brian Phillip, actually addressed that in a post that he put up earlier today, Bob. And he said, "I'm listening to the most recent podcast, and the discussions of the end of kayfabe and the birth of sports entertainment. I've read and heard on other podcasts that back in the 90s that these two things were going to kill the industry and no one was going to watch wrestling TV or attend live events. People talk about the curtain call at MSG and McMahon's press conference in New Jersey about WWF being sports entertainment and not wrestling, and that's what killed it. But think about what happened after that. Monday Night Wars happened, and pro wrestling sports entertainment ratings soared for a few years. Interesting juxtaposition." So fans who listen to this also are like, this was a different era. We were tearing the curtain down. We were talking about things that were not talked about before. And a lot of people in the business said it was going to kill the business, but it really never did. I think it piqued interest from the fans who really took wrestling more seriously. There were more of the avid fans, and they wanted this information. They were hungry for what was going on behind the scenes, because wrestling has always been, or had been, very traditionally a very closed industry where you could not get any information at all whatsoever.
Yeah. So just to show you very quickly what kind of effect it had on us as kids watching this. My friend had come back. He came to school the next day. He was a good friend of mine. We still are close friends to this day. And he went to a house show at the Montreal Forum. And where he was seated, from his point of view, he could almost see backstage. And he told me, and he said, "I couldn't believe it. I saw Brutus the Barber Beefcake talking with Outlaw Ron Bass backstage before they came out to fight." And our friends and I, of course, we knew that, you know, the outcome was predetermined. It was just a show. But to hear that, we were kind of disappointed that they were so careless about it. You know, we kind of bought into the kayfabe, you know, with the suspension of disbelief. So when we heard that, sure, we were disappointed, but we never stopped watching. We found it actually fascinating that this is a predetermined show, that these guys are, you know, they have to talk about what they're going to do beforehand. And then, boom, the Attitude Era hits and we didn't care. We didn't care yes. that they admitted that obviously the results were predetermined.
Yeah, yeah, I always found it fascinating that people just really dug what we were doing back then, and it made them become even more fervent wrestling fans.
I agree with that. Absolutely. The more information people got, the more they enjoyed it.
I can't believe you guys were doing that early. That, you know, for me, it was around 95, 96, 97, where that stuff, we really started to notice that the WWE was admitting, you know, what we knew all along. But you guys doing this back in, you know, 91, 92, 93, it's incredible to me.
And not only that, it's not what John set out to do. Yeah. You didn't set out to do that, John. That was not your intention. It's just the natural
that way. Yeah.
It just naturally occurred. It was. You know, all the serious things that the era kind of prompted all that.
Yeah, it was an interesting evolution. And when all the, you know, things that I wanted to find out more about myself as a host and a fan, like, you know, why did Ricky Steamboat leave the NWA, you know, yes. right after he had the NWA world title? What happened there? Why did he leave? He was one of the mainstays. And when he agreed to come on the show to talk about it, that kind of started the ball rolling. And then, you know, things Bruno was talking about. So it was an interesting evolution. And sometimes the show's balance between kayfabe and non-kayfabe, it was a tightrope all the time. Some performers wanted to come on in character. Some did not. So it was always a juggling act. And what we're going to do on tonight's episode, as Bob will get to in a second, is talk to someone about, you know, he was one of those guys that respected what we were doing as journalists at the time. And he kind of even though he was, you know, a major figure and still is, yeah, he kind of embraced it. He kind of knew that things were changing back then. But we will get to that. And Jay, thank you as always. And we appreciate it. And Bob, we're going to get this thing started. But I do want to mention our Patreon community. We did pick up about half a dozen members this week, which is great. $5 a month gets you access to the entire Pro Wrestling Spotlight library from the first show in 1989 and even earlier if you want to count the college shows right through May of 1992. And new episodes each and every Sunday are uploaded. You get early access to this podcast and the sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, which we have a great show coming up. This next episode released on May 22nd, which covers that 50-year ago anniversary when Pampero Firpo met Pedro Morales at Madison Square Garden. And we were fortunate on that show to have Pampero Firpo's daughter, who talks about her dad in such an eloquent way. And we find out some really behind-the-scenes stories about Pampero Firpo. That's the sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden. And that's available wherever you listen to your podcast. But the Patreon account is doing okay. We got lots of stuff up there. Each and every Sunday, tons of content are released. So join it today. Patreon.com/John Arizzi. Let's get into this week's show. May 31st, 1992. 30 years ago, Bob. What did we have going on then?
Folks, don't run like a scalded dog from your podcast machine. I'm doing all my favorite expressions that our guest used to say yes. during WCW broadcasts, if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say who it is at this point?
Yes, go right ahead, man.
We have, you know what? I was just thinking about this. Jim Ross may be the longest lasting wrestling personality working today. I can't think of anybody that's been around longer, do you?
No, you're talking about really mid-80s.
Yeah, and he's still at it. Yeah. Most people have either gotten old and retired or fallen by the wayside, but Jim Ross may be the longest lasting on-air personality, let me be, you know, specific, who worked probably back to 82 or 81 to today. That's amazing.
Yeah. And he's been resilient. He's been unceremoniously fired a few times in different organizations. He always comes back. And the one thing about Jim is he's always been very well respected by the wrestling community and the wrestling fans. He's beloved.
He's also doggone good at what he does. He's one of the all-time greats. One of the, you know, if I look back through my own personal favorites, Jim Ross, Lance Russell, people that era, Gordon Solie, of course, who, you know, was the Walter Cronkite, I thought of wrestling announcers. But Jim brought a wry sense of humor when he wanted to. He could be really sports-specific when he wanted to. And he could be funny. He really had it all going on, and considering he started as a referee, I think it's pretty remarkable what he made out of himself.
Without a doubt. And he was always somebody that and he did the show a handful of times, maybe three or four appearances over the history of the show. And each one of those was very memorable for me, to just to have him on there and his expertise, his knowledge. And we brought him on right in the middle of some very drastic changes that were going on within WCW at the time.
Yeah, this, I thought this was, as we used to say in radio, a good get, because it's like, at this particular juncture, there was a lot going on in WCW. It was really topsy-turvy at this very moment when he decided to appear on your show.
It was a timely appearance for sure.
It really was.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you about a company I highly recommend. It's our friends over at Fabric Life Insurance. They offer a simple, uncomplicated way to protect your entire family, and you can do it all online. You can get term life insurance quickly and easily at their online hub. Just go to meetfabric.com to get fast, affordable term life insurance. You can create a will for your family, set up your kids' college savings plan, and even establish a rainy day savings fund. Planning for the future has never been easier. Protect your family with term life insurance now in just 10 minutes. Apply today at meetfabric.com/wrestling. That's meetfabric.com/wrestling to start protecting your family today. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/wrestling. There's no risk to apply, and Fabric has a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel it at any time. So please check out our friends, Fabric Life Insurance. I highly recommend them.
So you want to get started? We'll look at the news of the day.
Of course. I mean, lots of stuff was going on 30 years ago, as our ace reporter, Donnie Leibel, each and every week gave us the scoop.
That's right. The one-man wrestling encyclopedia with his news capsule, which we have redubbed the time capsule all these years later. So what happened then? Let's find out right now.
And we got lots to cover tonight. Big news happening. And, of course, our very special guest, direct from World Championship Wrestling, Jim Ross, will be joining us in just a few minutes right here at the program. And I tell you, it's been an interesting week. The biggest story, which we'll be breaking in just a few minutes, concerns the split up of wrestling's number one couple. So we'll get into all that with Donnie Leibel with the news capsule. And why don't we bring Don on right now? Get right into it.
All right, John, thank you, and good evening, everybody. Leading off the capsule, World Championship Wrestling's latest pay-per-view, WrestleWar, according to preliminary buy rate estimates published in this week's Observer, could very well come in as the all-time lowest for the promotion. Now, the May 17th event held in Jacksonville, Florida at a 1995 purchase price is said to have drawn between 0.3 and 0.6 in business. Sticking with the WCW, another promotion among the administration has apparently been handed down by Vice President of Wrestling Operations Bill Watts. Gary Juster, an events coordinator handling arenas primarily on the East Coast in the past, has relocated to the Atlanta area from Virginia. In a published report, the Torch states all regional events coordinators whose positions are currently under evaluation will report to Juster. Turning to news in between the ring ropes, last Saturday in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the WCW TV title once again returned to the Dangerous Alliance, thanks to some timely interference at ringside by manager Paulie Dangerously. Stunning Steve Austin pinned Barry Windham and exited the ring as the champ. Well, get ready, cable subscribers, for fresh wrestling programming. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight newsletter claims that Tony Capone, head of the North American Wrestling Association, has signed a deal with Sports Channel. A June 13th TV taping is scheduled at the Mount Vernon High School by the NAWA. Close to 1,000 fans attended Smoky Mountain Wrestling's Volunteer Slam last week in Knoxville, Tennessee, for the tournament to crown the promotion's first ever heavyweight champion. Brian Lee came away the winner over Paul Orndorff in the final round as Mr. Wonderful was disqualified by the referee for using a chain. Finally, Japanese mat hero Tatsumi Fujinami is still in the States, the subject of a documentary on his career being filmed by a Japanese production company. Today in the Boston suburb of Malden, Massachusetts, it was the legendary Killer Kowalski instructing the Dragon on sharpening up his skills and technique on those knee drops off the top turnbuckles. For the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, I'm Don Leibel reporting. Capsule time, 11:04.
And, of course, Donnie, the biggest news of the week as
Way
far
to
as...
to break that, John.
I tell you, the situation that's developed between Macho Man Randy Savage and his wife Elizabeth, reports are this week that they have separated. She's filing for divorce. We're trying to get more information on it. And as soon as we do, of course, we'll bring it to our listeners and our newsletter readers. But that's certainly going to put a monkey wrench in some of the things happening in the WWF, of course. One of their main feuds going on right now is Ric Flair against Macho Man, with Elizabeth a key part of that angle. So it's not things have got to change a little bit. I wonder how they're going to handle this one.
Well, John, I did hear from somebody in New England today, and the Sunday wrestling column, I forgot the name of the Boston newspaper right in the metropolitan area there, had printed that too. So the word is getting around.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep checking on that information, and we've been hearing a few other things, which I guess we'll be able to talk about next week regarding the World Wrestling Federation. I tell you, there's more news happening outside the ring there than inside the ring, and we will be checking up on some of the major stories we've been hearing, as usual, here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
The big breakup, John.
Yeah, I mean, that was major news, and Elizabeth and Randy, of course, had a volatile relationship. I mean, because he was so jealous and he was so volatile in his personality. And that was a big story. I mean, that really was major, major news of that era, really, because they were so joined at the hip since he entered the WWF years earlier.
And that angle they were running with Ric Flair at that point.
That was horrible.
It was bad. Not only that, but I just wonder if maybe that didn't help matters any. I'm just guessing, you know. It was kind of
might have put a little gasoline on the fire, right? Even though Hogan and Savage did those earlier angles when they split, there was always a little sense of Randy was actually jealous and mad, no matter who Liz did anything with in the ring.
Could be.
I wonder if he was jealous of George the Animal Steel.
I was just thinking that before you said it. That's right. Yeah. Then at one point, Elizabeth thought George wasn't so bad. And wouldn't she come into ringside with him for a while?
She did, I think she was.
I guess he gets tired of the doll, I guess. So,
What do you call that doll?
Mine. M-I-N-E. Okay.
Jay shaking his head. He knows. He probably
second worst doll in WWF history following... What was Paul Ellering's ventriloquist dummy? You remember they actually had Paul Ellering?
Yes.
Rocco,
the ventriloquist dummy.
Take the brawling Road Warriors and give Paul Ellering a ventriloquist dummy. What in the world? Seriously now.
Yeah.
Talk about watering down a good product. I mean.
Yeah, well, it happening today with Alexa Bliss and her little rag doll that she carries around.
Yeah, I didn't see the program. I know she came back looking more normal, but she still got the doll.
Lily.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Well, the fans.
You know what? She's really good. I think she's being misused personally.
She's great. I mean, what's going on in that federation? I mean, before we get to the show, I mean, you know, Alexa's back finally, and she is loved by the fans. And now you have Sasha Banks and Naomi, you know, walking out. leaving their belts on the desk of John Laurinaitis and stepping out and quitting.
I got to tell you, that's cold. That's a rough thing to do in that industry. That's kind of unheard of, particularly at that level. Yeah, that is a huge story.
Big story unfolding. Big story unfolding there. Yeah. People have had enough.
Well, I hope they haven't had enough of our guest Jim Ross, because he's still working for AEW, and we got him in his prime here, John. And it was, like I say, this was a good get for you, because there was a lot going on in WCW at this joint.
Mm-hmm. It certainly was. I was happy to have him.
So shall we take you to a very rare at the time interview? He didn't give a lot of media interviews at this point, so this was pretty juicy. And he's gonna really get into a lot of topics now, prompted, of course, by John's questions. So here we go.
Direct from World Championship Wrestling, we're talking about Mr. Jim Ross. And Mr. Ross, you there?
Sure am, John. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a pleasure to have you here at WEVD. And this is the first time that you've graced the airwaves here in New York City with us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be on the air with you, and I look forward to hopefully talking to some of your listeners.
Okay. A lot of exciting things happening in World Championship Wrestling right now, and the first thing is the appointment of Mr. Bill Watts coming back to wrestling, the man that most of the hardcore wrestling fans out there consider the number one guy as far as to turn things around in WCW. Now, there must be a sense of excitement right now in the offices of WCW regarding the Watts appointment.
Well, I think there's a genuine enthusiasm for this journey we're about to embark on. I think that for most of us that have been there since the Turner acquisition of the organization, that we've all gone through a lot of real frustrating times, and I think finally we truly believe that we have someone in a leadership capacity that has a wrestling background and will be able to lead us to success. Got great enthusiasm, and he's got great knowledge, and I think it's just going to be a great situation.
Well, this weekend, I guess actually tomorrow and Tuesday, will be the first WCW television tapings under Watts' supervision. Can you tell us anything as far as the shakeup of any of the formats for TV, or can you give us any clue or idea what's going to be taking place tomorrow or Tuesday at Center Stage as far as anything different being done that hasn't been done previously, or some changes made?
Well, John, the Saturday night TBS format is being completely reevaluated. We made a format change. Some of our upper management people thought it was time for a change, and the change was initiated after 19 years of basically the same format. So WCW Saturday Night was created, and quite frankly, it's not something that's been endearing to the fans. The ratings have been competitive. They haven't been great, but they certainly haven't been bad. We still have been delivering well over a million homes every weekend with that product. But we're going back to a more spontaneous, more wrestling-oriented Saturday Night TBS program. I think it's going to be produced episodically. I think fans will see things leading from week to week. We're taking the chairs out of the ring. We're stopping with the guest co-host for a whole program. We're still going to have guests from the entertainment and sports world from time to time, but they'll be in a special interview segment, and we'll address it that way. But I think you're going to see more wrestling, more action, more spontaneity, and we're going to really try to create that studio feel of the old studio wrestling show from Center Stage. At least those are our goals at this point.
I recall back in 89 when I guess you first moved into Center Stage, it was a pretty intimate atmosphere there, and it was a real exciting time to watch WCW. And now with Watts coming in, and I'm sure you're going to see a lot more exciting interviews from the wrestlers, because that's one thing that he prided himself on. And I guess in working in your days with Bill and the UWF, the old UWF, the wrestlers telling their story, getting their point across, developing the storylines, and really hitting hard at the feuds that they'll be involved with.
Well, it's an essential part of wrestling to see the other side of a wrestler, let him or her communicate with you. We have not put the emphasis on the interviews that I feel like that we should have in the last few years, but be that as it may, in the Mid-South and the UWF, we had some guys who could really do good promos. A lot of our people right now have not been really forced to do a lot of promos, And so some of them, quite frankly, are going to have to adapt and improve in their communication skills. Not to say they can't do it. They just haven't had to do it. But it is going to be something that's going to be very important. And I think that I know when I was a kid watching wrestling, I watched it for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons I watched it growing up was to hear the interviews. I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of it.
Yeah, same here. We're really looking forward to the new WCW product, the revamped WCW product. Now, your history with Bill Watts goes back a ways, Jim. He's pretty much the guy that gave you your first big break in the business. Can you tell our listeners the history of your relationship with Bill Watts?
Well, I was in college in the early 70s, and our fraternity did a wrestling match for a benefit for charity. And he was involved in the promotion then based in Tulsa. And he was in management, was also wrestling. And so he was wrestling on that event. And we just developed a relationship and seemed to get along well in the early beginning. And when I got out of college, he offered me a job working in the wrestling office. And I did everything from taking out the trash to writing commercial copy and just a gopher. Boss smoked cigars. I made a lot of cigar runs. But then I started refereeing. I refereed for a year. And then one thing led to another, and I got a chance to work into the broadcasting side. Started out as a ring announcer. But I had all this opportunity to learn from him, and that was really a tremendous education, and it's helped me immensely. I would not be where I am today if it hadn't been for Cowboy Bill Watts. And it's just the honest truth, because he gave me my opportunity, and I had to make the most of it, and that's how he is. The rap on him is that he's a real tough George Patton, Vince Lombardi type guy, and to a certain extent he is, but I've never heard him really jump on people on a regular basis. If they came to work on time and they put out 100% and they did everything that was asked of them, you rarely heard those guys ever have a cross word with him. And really, that's what it's all about. No matter if you're a salesman or a student, be there on time, do your best, follow instructions, and everything's going to be cool. And that's pretty well the way he looks at it.
Mm-hmm. And yourself personally, with the company as of last week, I guess you were given a little bit of a promotion there yourself. And can you tell our listeners what your new responsibilities are? I know you had a heck of a lot of them even before you got the promotion, but I guess your workload has even increased now.
Yeah, it's been an interesting situation since I've been at TBS. My workload has been varied. It's changed a lot from the bordering, and probably in a lot of people's mind still, bordering on overexposure. It's just a situation where you just keep getting assigned responsibilities, and I kept assuming them, and just because that's just, it was in my contract, you'll do basically whatever you're instructed to do, and so you do what you're told, and you earn your money and try to be a success. Wrestling's no different than anybody else's job, you do what your boss tells you to do, and so I've got an opportunity when Bill came back to do what I really wanted to do. When I worked for Bill before, I was in charge of operations, and I was a vice president there in charge of syndication and marketing. And what has happened here at TBS and WCW is I've been put in charge of television syndication and our national ad sales network, which Rob Garner heads up that department. I'm in charge of advertising and marketing and merchandising, and Sharon Sedello heads up that department for us. And I'm in charge of production of the company, television production, and Keith Mitchell is the division head there, department head. And I'm in charge of arena bookings and the promoters. And when I got my job, my promotion, I named Gary Jester the head of that division. So I've got real good people in the very key departments, and I feel like that my management style is to give them guidance and some leadership and let them know the direction that we want to go in, our goals are, and they understand what they are, and then let them go to work. And that's kind of what we're doing right now. We've really got better organized, and we've got more focus, and I'm excited about being able to work in that area for the first time since being back at TBS.
Well, it sounds like an exciting time for you, and with the new responsibilities, how will that affect your on-air responsibilities? Will that be affected at all by your new title?
Well, I hope not, John. I'm not as involved in so many products as I was. Saturday morning and Saturday night on TBS, looks like it'll stay. There could be some changes in Saturday morning, but I don't feel like there'll be any changes at all on Saturday night. Sunday, basically all I do on the Sunday show anymore is an interview, and I enjoy doing those interviews. They give me a little bit of time to ask a few questions instead of just, you know, here's Arn Anderson, and the guy talks for a minute, and, well, that was Arn Anderson, you know. And there's people, I think the fans have questions they want answered, and I try to ask the questions that I think that they would want to ask if they were there. So and then I'm on the WCW Pro show. I don't think that's in the New York market, except the WGN version might be if it's on cable somewhere. But we're putting a lot of effort in worldwide, so and I'll be there to help produce those shows. But I hope it doesn't affect my work. I'm still going to work on the clashes with Jesse the Body and the pay-per-views. And the work in the office is really a challenge because you got to be disciplined, you got paperwork, you got deadlines. But when I get to go be a wrestling announcer, the fun of doing it really doesn't make it seem like work, because that's where I can really be a fan again. Mm-hmm. And have fun and, you know, get excited when you see something neat, you know. So I look at them as two different jobs. One of them is like the normal job that a regular human would have, and the other one is just this wild, crazy job as a wrestling announcer, which is a little bit different.
And, of course, you got your radio show every Sunday night down at WSB in Atlanta.
Did my radio show tonight on WSB in Atlanta. And I had Cowboy Bill Watts on as my guest.
Wow.
And we had a good show, a lot of real good questions tonight, and a lot of callers. And I'm working on another project with the WSB that will be in a bigger and more expanded role within their station. So I'm going to stay real busy, do the hotline on Saturday, and write a magazine column once a month for the WCW magazine. I'm just trying to find more things to do. I quit smoking last week, so I feel like I've started to accomplish a few good things.
You did?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll follow your lead.
8 days now.
Wow. Congratulations on that.
I'm not too cranky.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, people forget the massive amount of product that WCW put on television, syndicated.
Yeah. Yeah, a ton of product, and listening to him and the responsibilities, the amount of work and duties that was on his plate. From not just the announcing part of it, which is the part he enjoyed most, but then you have the marketing, and you have overseeing promoters and merchandising, and then he had his WSB radio show, and then he was trying to get into announcing college football at the time. And so, man, talk about being busy. That dude was busy.
And you know what? A lot of those same duties carried on when we went to the WWF as well, I think. I mean, it just kind of – he was more than just an announcer. He was – I guess the best thing you could say maybe is that he's somebody you could always count on. You know, he's very professional and very learned. You know, he knew the business and he knew the wrestling business. So, you know, that combination is pretty rare.
Oh, yeah. And when he went at WWF, of course, his role with talent relations just increased. And he was, you know, bringing guys in and convincing Vince on one situation, really put his neck out for a guy named Mick Foley to bring Mick into the WWF. But yeah, his responsibilities and what he did. I mean, you have a guy like that, such an expert in so many different things, but you could tell by talking to him that, yeah, his joy was being in front of the microphone.
Absolutely. Yeah. You could really pick up on that in that clip, what he meant by that. That was number one for him, no matter what else was going on. He loved announcing the best, probably still does.
Yeah.
Another thing I picked up from that clip was, you know, he manages people like Gary Juster, who's one of the people who wrestling fans that would never talk about. Gary Juster was a huge promoter here on the East Coast. I mean, he did shows all over. I think he did Baltimore, Philadelphia, a lot of other cities. And
yes,
Gary is one of the silent majority of really historical figures in wrestling at that time.
Yeah, he and I did. We did a lot of business. Anytime I did a deal with WCW to give away tickets, or a lot of times it was a trade deal, you know, he'd give me a spot to read and he'd give me 40 to 50 tickets to give away. And that was always a great relationship I had with Gary. And he tried, you know, those markets, those Northeast markets were his, you know, New York, Philly, Baltimore. And those were, especially Philly and Baltimore, some of the hottest cities for the WCW.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of New York, the next segment, details your great wish that time, which was trying to get WCW back into the New York area. They had just lost the Meadowlands. Mm-hmm. And you weren't happy about that, were you?
Oh, not at all. I mean, it was just kind of the monopoly. It was like the monopoly was going on for so many years. And I used to get so upset, like, why not have free enterprise? And it really started in the mid-70s when the IWA was formed, and they tried to get into venues, and they were blocked. And of course, NWA, WCW, they were blocked from the Garden and Nassau Coliseum. So it wasn't a player. It wasn't a fair playing field.
And here are the East Coast where we're broadcasting the show from. It was a situation where the fans wanted an alternative really badly. I mean, you can look at Joel Gerhardt's success for a while in those terms, because when it was good stuff, they'd go.
Yeah.
They would show up. They'd take bus trips with you. I mean, it was like if there was an alternative to the one show, they definitely wanted to come and enjoy it. And I don't remember the Meadowlands crowds being really, really bad until the very end, last couple of shows.
Well, then that's when, you know, there were no shows, and then it was kind of like it was falling apart, and they lost the market, and then they couldn't get back in for a long time. And it was just, it was a horrible thing to see. But some of those earlier shows were hot. They were hot shows, and they were hot crowds.
There's a title change in the first one.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. That was the Flair
Sting.
Beating Sting with the foot on the ropes routine.
Yep.
And I thought that was a great way to kick off the relationship with the fans there in Jersey and New York, because those fans were New York City fans too. They came over on buses.
Oh, of course.
You know, right from Port Authority bus terminal, they would take the buses from Manhattan all the way into New Jersey. So, and I remember doing it myself, to be honest with you. So, you know, it's just a shame to see them lose grip. So let's find out from Jim what the situation was at that point and what they intended to do about it.
We're back with our very special guest, direct from World Championship Wrestling, Jim Ross. And Jim, I tell you, it's certainly a shame right now here in the New York area that there's hardly any wrestling in this whole area. The independent scene is almost dried up, and unfortunately, WCW doesn't have a major venue here to come back to. Hopefully that'll change soon. I'm certainly hoping that'll happen. Any progress as far as getting into the New York market at this point?
Well, John, our philosophy basically is that once our product improves and once we get WCW better, it make it better for the fans and rebuild the confidence in the wrestling fans. When we advertise someone, they should be there.
Yeah.
When we can rebuild the confidence in the wrestling fans and we can produce exciting television on a consistent basis, then we feel like that and we can have some success in some other venues that we'll be able to negotiate something in the New York market. I think we have to be successful first. And once we are producing a better television show, hopefully we can negotiate a more compatible broadcast time in the New York market. It takes a great effort to stay up to 12:30 a.m. and watch our program, and we certainly appreciate everybody that does. But we should have our show at a better time. We've had a lot of adversity in the market. We've had overcome a lot of unnecessary challenges. But sooner or later, if we work hard and we can make our product better, then we're going to be able to compete. And that's all we ask, just the opportunity to compete there in that market and let the fans make the decision. I mean, my gosh, it's the biggest city in the world.
Yeah.
It's got room for two. I mean, you know.
It certainly does, and that's one thing that's always irritated me personally and a lot of the fans out there is that you have one wrestling promotion that can get into Madison Square Garden exclusively and the Nassau Coliseum, and that's just an unfortunate thing, and we hope that certainly can change in the near future, because I think the fans in New York City and the surrounding area will support WCW. And we hope to have you in here real soon. I know the fans up here are disappointed right now about the change of venue for the Bash from Philadelphia to Albany, Georgia. And
well, we are too. No disrespect meant to Albany, Georgia, but I mean, Philadelphia is a great city, and we have a lot of fun going there. And we really look forward to trying to reestablish ourselves in the East. Badly. It's a high priority for us, and we really wanted to come to Philly with a great show, and you know, and hopefully get the fans from up in your area to come, and we knew they'd come from Baltimore in that area. So we thought it'd be great, But unfortunately, the pending labor strike prevented us from being able to do it. If they would have went out on strike, we would have been unable to televise the event or even have the event. So we had to make a decision, and it was one that we wish we didn't have to make, but it was the only choice we had.
And I guess the Baltimore situation, that arena that you usually go into to do the bash is there, that was already booked, I would guess, for that
right.
Date.
Oh, yeah. Baltimore is our first choice because it has traditionally been the home of the Great American Bash. And as far as I'm concerned, it's still the home of the Great American Bash.
Mm-hmm.
The poor planning in our arena booking department was an issue there.
Yeah.
And we hope that, I think that we've corrected that. I think Gary Juster is an extremely competent guy, and he's got a law degree. He's very intelligent. But the main thing about Gary is that he has been a wrestling fan all his life. He loves the business, and he's going to do a great job in that position. And we won't find ourselves looking for arenas like that next summer.
That's great.
There he is talking about Gary Juster the same way I did. You know, it's mm-hmm. like Gary's one of the unsung heroes of the East Coast wrestling scene. He really is.
Absolutely. But, you know, listening to this all these years later, wasn't Gary the guy that booked Baltimore? And
yeah.
So what happened with this bash? I wonder what happened, why they couldn't get in there because it was already booked. And interesting stuff.
Who could say? I mean, you know, there was so much of that shenanigans going on with cities between WCW and the WWF, probably starting in the mid-80s right through this, you know, this point. Mm-hmm. They were always dancing, tap dancing.
Yeah, sounds like there were some shenanigans behind the scenes there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was constant, you know, vying for floor space.
Yeah.
And it was frustrating for a lot of fans because, you know, they would get used to seeing a certain promotion, let's say in the Baltimore arena, and then they're not there for 6 months or something would happen where they never came back. So, you know, and like we're talking about before, fans of that era wanted wrestling. They wanted WCW and they wanted the WWF. You know why? You'd see the same faces in the arenas if you'd go. You know, if you went there, they would show up time after time. Wrestling fans were very loyal. And
hotbeds over there,
yeah.
What a great venue. I mean, what great American Bashes, 89, 90. I remember those two yesterday.
They were great.
Both hot.
Yep.
Great.
Those are classic shows. And, you know, if you tune in to watch them now, they still look every bit as exciting as they did back then.
They hold up pretty well.
Absolutely. And, you know, WCW drew really well, I remember, in Connecticut. They used to run regularly at an arena in...
It's in New Haven?
New Haven, that's right. New Haven Coliseum. And I remember seeing an incredible Flair Steamboat match there. Every bit as good as the pay-per-view matches. In fact, it may have been the best house show match I ever watched. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
What a series.
And, yeah.
Flair Steamboat doing it one more time this year in July. Did you hear about that, Bob?
I think I just had a stroke. hold the phone. Oh, doctor. Explain this briefly. I don't believe what I'm hearing.
I know it's a little off topic, but Conrad Thompson's coming into Nashville with the StarCast 5, which is SummerSlam weekend here in town. And he's kicking it off with a roast of Ric Flair and a photo op with not the Four Horsemen, but it's going to be Luger. It's going to be the only first time and only time. It's Flair, Arn, Barry Windham, Lex Luger, J.J. Dillon, Paul Ellering, I believe. Not Paul Ellering, but there's five of them in this thing, and it's the only time they're doing it. And he's bringing in a show that's going to be a Jim Crockett Promotions show. To be the finale, and it's going to start at 6:05 on the Sunday, the day after SummerSlam. And he's building a set that's identical to Jim Crockett Promotions. And the main event is going to be hopefully the last time, and I think it's dangerous for him to get in the ring anyway, but Flair is going to don the tights, and he's going to be teaming up with the Rock and Roll Express. Ricky Steamboat, and there's another tag team that's a current tag team, but it's going to be a six-man tag, and Flair and Steamboat are going to lace them up and go at it one more time.
I can't. As the kids say, I can't. I just blew your mind.
You blew my head off my shoulders, dude.
I mean, they're really going to do this, huh?
Yeah, it's been announced, and I knew about it for probably about a month. But I was kind of sworn to secrecy till it came out, and it's come out.
No, it's amazing. I bet it draws.
Oh, it will draw, yeah.
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 For the curiosity factor alone.
Oh, without a doubt. It's going to be an interesting thing. StarCast is a, you know, it's shooting, it's a wrestling expo, and there will be matches from various promotions, too. That's going to be announced shortly, and it's going to be kind of a four-day thing, piggybacking off of the huge crowd that's coming into town for SummerSlam here in Nashville. It'll be huge because Nashville has never had an event of this magnitude, like a SummerSlam in town. And Conrad took advantage of that and is bringing StarCast in, and it'll be a lot of fun to see it. You know, I certainly plan on going to it, and I'm looking forward to it and seeing it. But Flair, he's got pacemakers. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and Ricky Steamboat's had his share of health problems too. But you know what? Let's play devil's advocate. I mean, okay. The Rock and Roll Express have wrestled semi-regularly in the NWA for the last year and a half. And they don't look that bad. You know, they were still able to go. I don't think for long. I can't see them wrestling for 20 minutes, but they could still look like a professional wrestling tag team, that's for sure. And they still do a lot of the moves they did back in the day. So who knows? Maybe people know something that I don't know. I just hope they just end the match safely with good health involved for everybody. That's the big thing.
Right. Well, here's the lineup. I mean, here's the four horsemen all together on stage for the first time and for the last time. Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard,
Tully,
and JJ, all together for a photo op with the fans. I wonder how much they're charging for that.
You know something? Even I would want a photo with those guys.
I think I would too.
You know what I'm saying? There's something about that, especially at this point in time. Yeah. I think I would like. I never do stuff like that, and then you mention that, and I go, geez, I'd like to do that. What is it about that particular group? I think, you know what? Those were the people who were major stars when we were in it. And I think it would be appropriate to have a photo like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a big autograph guy. I don't collect memorabilia. I never tried to get into things. Hey, take my picture with, other people would take pictures of me with wrestlers, but they weren't for me. They were for them. But in this case, that just sounds too good.
That's a very unique opportunity for sure.
It is. And it's once in a lifetime. Boy, that thing's going to draw like hotcakes. It really will.
But one thing Conrad had told me is like, you know, when he talked, and Flair, of course, is his father-in-law. Conrad married Rick's daughter. Conrad said that this is going to be his last match. He wouldn't do it unless Rick promised him that this would be the last time ever, really. And for Steamboat, it's got to be the same, you know?
I say this with all seriousness. Let's hope this final Nature Boy match goes way better than the last proposed final Nature Boy match, if you remember the Buddy Rogers thing. So let's hope it's good health, everybody emerges unscathed, and they entertain the fans. That's the big thing. I really mean this sincerely. Rick Steamboat is a real gentleman and a tremendous guy, and I have nothing but respect for Ric Flair. I just hope everybody's good and healthy and ready to do it, and they don't do anything crazy.
Yeah, nothing crazy. You know, let's just get the fans happy and do it. And Steamboat looks in good shape anyway. I saw him about a year ago at a wrestling convention. He looked really, really good.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Really good shape.
He's eternally youthful, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. So it's going to be fun. And that is StarCast coming to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure there'll be lots of fans out there, and it'll be fun to see it unfold.
Speaking of fun, questions. The fans got questions.
They do.
They really wanted to get a lot of news from Jim Ross. So let's find out what's on the mic. Like I say, this is the bread and butter of the John Arizzi radio shows. The fans calling in and asking the questions that they had. So here we go with some questions.
Let's go to our first caller for tonight, Rakim from Queens. You're first.
I have two questions for Jim Ross.
Let's go right ahead.
Are there any new arrivals in WCW unannounced yet?
Any more what?
New arrivals.
No, other than Steve Dr. Death Williams and Terry Gordy. They're the two, the newest guys we have. And, you know, they talk to wrestlers all the time. But right now, that's all that we can really announce that have signed.
Okay, thanks for your call. And there's been a lot of rumors about Jake the Snake Roberts. Any new developments regarding his situation?
No, none at all.
Okay. Let's go to Joe from Flushing. Joe, you're next.
Yeah, the number one radio wrestling show is, of course, Vicious Visits World of Wrestling.
Thank you, Joe. Is that all you have to say?
Yeah.
Okay, take care. Adam from Flushing, you're next.
Hi, good evening, John and Jim.
Good evening.
Hi, I have just two questions about the tag team tournament. Okay, first is, out of the foreign tag teams, which you think might fare the best in the tournament?
The foreign ones?
Yeah.
Probably Japanese team's going to be real tough to beat, because Hase's probably one of the top four or five wrestlers in the world today, and he's got a real good partner. Also, so I would say the Japanese probably are going to be the most formidable. I think they're also the number two seed, so they're pretty well thought of.
Okay, and also, do you think it's in the best interest of the WCW to possibly have the Steiners lose in the final round, and this might give them, like, the vulnerability that they need?
Well, that'll be completely up to Steiners. Anybody that's man enough to beat them I wish them the best of luck.
You know, one thing I'm looking forward to, Jim, is the pay-per-view coming up. And you have a match there with the Steiner brothers taking on Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Bam Bam Gordy. Are there going to be enough paramedics there to take care of the aftermath?
Well, that's going to be great. I tell you, that's, you know, quite honestly, I really believe that Beach Blast pay-per-view from top to bottom is more attractive lineup than WrestleWar. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
WrestleWar had the last three matches at WrestleWar really salvaged that show and made the show, I felt like, a good, solid pay-per-view. Not the greatest we've ever done, but a good, solid one. I think this show coming up has a chance to be a real sleeper, because there's some matches, if you look up and down the lineup, that could be, if all the variables fall into place, some pretty awesome matches, especially the first time that Williams and Gordy meet the Steiner brothers. I'm excited about that, as any fan listening, I can tell you.
Well, that's going to be a great one. Of course, you have Cactus Jack against Sting and Falls Count Anywhere on the Gulf Coast. And
well, yeah, you know, Cactus, that's right down his alley.
Yes, it is.
And it's on national television, and there's a lot of contributing factors there that you know that he's going to be playing on a different level. And then you have an opportunity for 30 minutes to see two of the finest performers in athletes in the sport, in Steamboat and Rude. That's going to be a heck of a thing, too. So I think that pay-per-view, you know, in all honesty, has a chance to be probably the sleeper pay-per-view of the year.
Well, maybe it'll even do a better buy rate than the War Games.
Yeah, the War Games came in about a .61.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was the lowest percent buy rate, because the universe was 19.1 million, we had it was one of our higher buys. As far as raw buys, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
The universe keeps expanding, and that's what salvaged the money on that aspect, was that the universe, Sharon Sadello, has done such a terrific job in getting us on a lot of cable systems that the percentage buy was down, and it was unacceptably down, quite frankly. But the raw buys were pretty competitive because the universe was so large.
Mm-hmm. And that will keep expanding also as time goes by. Let's go back to the phones. Mike from College Point, you're next.
Hey, John.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good.
What's happening?
Jim, well, not much. You were talking about independent earlier. I know there was an independent show today in Brooklyn, and Jimmy Snuka headlined, although I had a friend who went to the event. If you want, I'll find out the results.
Okay, we can get those for next week, sure.
Okay, and two quick questions for you, Mr. Ross.
Okay.
One, will Cactus finally get the push he deserves?
Well, I'll put it this way. If Cactus Jack continues to work hard and continues on the pace he's on, there's no reason to think that he won't get every opportunity here to be successful.
Okay.
The final word there will be up to Cactus, because it's going to be judged on how well Cactus does. There's not going to be any politics played. you're wondering about that. There's not any problems with it. The best man, Watts' theory is real simple. No matter who has a contract, no matter who's guaranteed big money, the best players play. And we could have some awfully high-paid preliminary wrestlers for us all over.
Okay, and second one. Have the following men been dismissed from WCW because we haven't really seen them in the last couple of months? Mike Graham, El Gigante, Steve Armstrong, Van Hammer, and Thomas Rich.
Let's go one at a time here.
Yes, yes, no, no, yes. No. I see El Gigante is still under contract, but he's not active. Okay. Thomas Rich still wrestling. Van Hammer still wrestling. Mike Graham is a road agent. Who else did you ask about, John?
Young Pistol Steve.
Steve is gone.
He's gone?
Gone to greener pastures.
Okay, listen, thanks for your call.
All right, talk to you next week, John.
Okay. Of course, there's also a lot of speculation on who may be coming in with the Watts regime, and a couple of names have been brought up consistently as far as in the rumor mill. One is Eddie Gilbert, the other is Terry Funk. Any word on any of those two guys, Jim?
No. To my knowledge, there's been no discussion at all about to either of those two individuals.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time with Bill since he's been here, and we've spent the weekend together here. Matter of fact, we worked today. We were at the office at 10 o'clock this morning, and working on the Sabbath was against my mom's best wishes, but I'm not going to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a lot of work to do. But those two names haven't come up now. That's not to say that they won't. It's somewhere down the line, and it's certainly not to say that their abilities aren't respected. It's just the fact that I really believe that Bill is comfortable right now with the staff as it sits, and under he's going to give it a chance to work under his leadership and under his goals and under his rules. And so I don't expect any changes in those capacities right at the present time.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Pete from Eatontown, you're next.
Yes, hello, John.
Hi, Pete.
How you doing?
Okay.
Two questions from Mr. Ross. Number one, from what I've heard about Bill Watts, he's a traditionalist and somewhat of an old-fashioned type of a guy, and that he would prefer to have more of a closed business as far as wrestling is concerned. I wondered if that's true and if what that would mean as far as accessibility of wrestlers and other people to news programs on radio and the newsletters and so forth.
Well, I think Bill is a traditionalist in many many ways. As far as the work ethic and putting out, giving the fans their money's worth, never cheating the customer, always giving them 100%, delivering what you advertise. He's a very fan-oriented man in regard to his product and his demands of the product. He loves the wrestling business, and he respects the wrestling business very much. I think he strongly suggests that our athletes respect the business as much as well. And back a little bit more of a throwback to the old days. You're not going to see any situations of fraternization, that type of situation.
Right.
But as far as the closed business is concerned, I know he reads some of the newsletters. I know he communicates with some of the newsletter people. He respects what the hardcore fans have to say. We all do. It's great to see what other people's perspectives are, what you're doing. But we do feel like that there is a certain amount of confidential information. We'd like to see our television shows air and get your impression of it as you watch it before you've read it somewhere where someone gave a match 3 stars or they said the show was bad. When they saw it being taped, and they don't know all the other pieces that have gone into it, but they've already prejudged it.
Yes.
It'd be great to have our hardcore fans that are so loyal and are so knowledgeable to watch a television program and judge it on that viewing.
On the spot.
And not anything else, just that viewing, and then say whatever the heck's on their mind.
Right.
Tear it apart if they choose, but judge it on the intent of which it was produced and created, but not when you read a review in something and you read somebody else's opinion. I've got a problem with that personally. I mean, it's no big issue, but I don't want anybody telling me the end of the movie.
That's true.
So, you know, but I think that he is a traditionalist, but I don't think that's all bad.
One other quick question. What would you say does the future look like for Jesse the Body Ventura as an announcer? Because I heard he has a real heavy contract, and you know, it might be one of those deals. What are we doing paying an announcer this kind of money? It's a wrestling business, not an announcing business.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good question. Jesse has a situation, a financial arrangement with WCW that I'm sure he's very pleased with, and the company's pleased with at this point in time. He is obviously very talented, and we're very happy he's here. I don't really think there's any problem. You're right, it is it's a wrestling business. But Jesse kind of transcends an announcer. You know, he's more of a personality. He's had some mass appeal exposure, something I never had. I mean, I'm a wrestling announcer. Hopefully I'm going to be the wrestling announcer 10 years from now. But that's what I'm going to be, is a wrestling announcer, and I'm proud of that. But Jesse's kind of a more of a personality type. So, but there's no problem with it. You know, we're glad to have him. He's a lot of fun, and he's real entertaining.
Well, I think speaking as a fan, it's great to see him back in wrestling. Yeah. I hope he has a long future there.
He loves wrestling too. And he was a fan growing up, and he's having fun again. And he's going to have a lot more fun because that Worldwide show is getting ready to be, the burner be turned up on that one.
Yeah, it's a good program. Listen, we got to run, Pete. Thank you. Let's go to our next caller, Joey from Lafayette. You're next.
Hi. I have two questions for Jim Ross.
Okay, quickly.
Who's going to fill the void for Larry Zbyszko in the Dangerous Alliance? And Johnny Badd won a light heavyweight tournament on WCW main event about a month ago. He's supposed to get a title shot, but he never has.
Well, to answer your first question, I'm not sure who's going to fill the void in the Dangerous Alliance. I'm sure Paul's going to be doing some scouting, and I don't know if it's going to be someone from inside WCW or he's going to bring somebody in. We'll be finding that out on our TV shows in the next few weeks, and it should be interesting to keep track of that. Johnny B. Badd, I'm not so sure that he didn't have a match. It maybe not been televised, but he has not had a televised match with Pillman for the light heavyweight title, but they have wrestled for the light heavyweight title.
Yeah, they've appeared at some of the house shows, I believe.
Yeah, and he wasn't successful at Pillman beat him.
Okay, let's go to our next caller, Pete from Flushing. You're next.
Hello, John.
Hey, Pete.
Hey, how you doing?
Turn your radio down, please.
Sure. All right, I got two questions for Jim Ross.
Okay.
All right, Jim, who do you think is the most well-rounded wrestler in a WCW in regards to wrestling talent and interviewing ability?
Probably Arn Anderson.
I'd have to agree. And who do you enjoy co-hosting with the most?
Well, gosh, you know, I've worked with some guys who are really fun. You know, I enjoyed working with Michael Hayes. I enjoyed working with Paul E. I enjoyed working with Bill. And I enjoy working with Jesse. It's all a different Jesse, and I have fun with Jesse. Paul was kind of like an adventure. It was kind of like going on a roller coaster, you knew you were going to have some tremendous ups, but you darn sure knew you were going to have some tremendous downs, and you just want to make sure your seatbelt was fastened and so you could stay in the seat. It was always an adventure, in other words. Michael Hayes, and at one time, I thought was about as good as it was. So it's hard to say because they all bring different things, but I can, those four or five guys I really, really like working with. Like Jim Cornette I like working with too, you know, but he's doing Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and I'm happy for him, and maybe I'll work with him. Maybe he'll hire me someday.
Huh. Nice little territory Mr. Cornette is building there. And Jim, one question that I got as far as Bill Watts. Will he be appearing on camera?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he's going to appear on camera. We're taping tomorrow night in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. At Center Stage, the first show will air the June 13th, and he'll be introduced as the Vice President of Wrestling Operations. I'll give your listeners a little tip. He's going to also introduce Ole Anderson as the senior referee in WCW, and we're going to review some of the rules and the changes, and their fans are going to see an increased emphasis on the rules that will be adhered to on our television matches and in the arenas.
So all that good, hard information from Jim Ross, and still you get a crank call about
Vicious Vincent.
Yep.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't end, would it? It wouldn't stop.
No, it's just getting started, Bob.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's just getting started, yeah. Yeah, there'll be more of that. And anyone wants to check out the first two episodes ever of Vicious Vincent's World of Wrestling, they're up on Patreon right now. The only two shows I have of that illustrious radio show that aired in 1992, patreon.com/John Arezzi. One of our patrons said, is there any device or any technology that you can forget what you just listened to, take it back? Yeah, there wasn't a lot of positive reaction to Vince's solo radio show, but you can check it out, patreon.com/John Arezzi. Yeah, and there was a lot of good questions there, Bob. And
The fans did a great job on that one.
Yeah, they were very intelligent, very well thought. There wasn't a lot of fluff. you know, where's Ultimate Warrior type of stuff.
That's right.
It was really an intelligent segment, and it was really cool to see the evolution of Mike Johnson calling in each week with some questions. And he's the one that asks, is Cactus Jack going to get the push he finally deserves? And so Mike, you know, had dove right into after he discovered Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And you could tell that each week he's doing a little bit more research on what questions he's going to ask. So that was, this is kind of cool to listen to as this unfolds.
It was, you know, you had some pretty illustrious callers there as you go through your history on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, young boys who became millionaires, right? Things like that.
All of that. Yes, very much so. Yeah. So, it's kind of cool to listen back to all of this. And I really enjoyed that segment just because of how intelligent the questions were.
Yeah, that was meaty. That was really good. You got to give, you know, the fans, wrestling fans of that era were really great. I mean, you know, from the arenas, the Vladimirs of the world, you know, the people you'd see every card you went to, you'd see the same faces. Hey, listen, it's the fans that put the money in the pockets of the wrestlers, the promotions, guys like you and me. Yes. You know, wrestling put food on my table for a long time. So it's like, and where does that money come from? It came from people reaching in their pockets and spending money on professional wrestling. So here's to you fans out there, even the old timers that are listening or the young people too, because it's like, if it wasn't for you guys, you know, you butter the bread, guys. You're the people who make it all happen. People tend to forget that too.
And especially for a show that actually aired 30 years ago. They're supporting it. They're on Patreon. They're listening to this podcast, and they're out there, and we really appreciate them each and every week right here.
Well, you know, your little Patreon get-togethers that we've been having once a month, I can't tell you how much I enjoy them and meeting these folks and getting to know them a little bit. There's some really, really cool people involved in your Patreon community.
We're going to do another one, and we're starting to get some questions already for the next one. So people are looking forward to it. We'll make an announcement on the next show what date that will be and how people can participate in it.
Yeah. In case you folks don't know, you get to talk to us.
Yeah.
And ask any questions you want. You can talk about new stuff, old stuff. Sometimes we veer off into like baseball and stuff like that, but it's just a freewheeling discussion about things new and
potpourri. It's a potpourri of everything.
Good word, John. Okay. Well, we have one last set of calls. This isn't going to take very long, but we have some interesting clips. So here we go.
Pete from East Meadow, you're next.
Yes, good evening, John and Jim. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I got two quick questions and a comment for both of you.
Okay, quickly.
Okay, Jim, who do you think is the most underrated wrestler, either singles or tag team in WCW?
Underrated, probably the lady mentioned, Terrence Taylor, probably the most underrated. What was your other question?
And the other question is, in your personal opinion, in the bikini contest between Medusa and Missy, who do you think would win?
Well, I'm leaning toward Medusa, but not for any particular reason.
Mm-hmm. That should be another exciting part of that pay-per-view. Let's go to Evan from Great Neck. Evan, you're next.
Hi, John. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Good.
My question is, now with Bill Watts in charge of WCW, what does the future relationship hold with New Japan?
Oh, it's great. We had a long meeting with Mr. Matsuda, who's their representative and works with us, and he's one of their top officials now. He's done very well in their organization. And Bill has a great rapport with him from their days of wrestling together in Florida. So we envision hopefully making it more effective.
Right. And quickly, I just want to get your views on the recent WWF Ultimate Warrior Papa Shango angles. Do you think they've gone to such the extreme that it's no longer – I mean, some people say it's not wrestling, it's half entertainment, half wrestling. Do you think at this point they've gone all the way?
Well, I hate to set everybody else's standards by mine. Personally, I found it not to my liking, but it may if it sparks their ratings, I guess it worked. But I don't think you'll be seeing anything even closely resembling that scenario on WCW, especially now that the Cowboys are around.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Evan. Okay. Two more quick calls. Paul from Staten Island. Paul, are you there? Okay, Pete from
Hello.
Yes, who's this?
Oh, this is Paul from Staten Island.
Okay, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Mr. Ross, I have a question for you. I really hope you can answer.
All right.
It's about Beach Blast. There's going to be a six-man tag team title match between Wyndham Rhodes and Cole Orton.
That's not a title match.
Well, they said it's for the six-man tag titles. Over.
Well, I'm trying to explain to you that that's an error. It's not a title match.
Oh, it's not. Or would it be Taylor, Morton, and Rich defending the titles?
No, it'll be a six-man tag, but it will not be a title match.
I think that title was, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, I think that was... now ceases to exist, right?
Yes, it's not defended any longer.
Okay. All right, that's going to about wrap it up for our calls for Jim Ross. And, Jim, we wish you continued success with WCW, and we're all excited about the big cowboy coming in, and we're looking forward to the changes that may take place in WCW and the improvement of the product, and we just wish you the best of luck.
Well, John, I appreciate it very much, and I appreciate your support and the support of your listeners out there. They tune in, you know, they need to support your sponsors and keep the show on the air. It's important. Wrestling fans need the opportunity to express themselves and to say what's on their mind, and you're offering that. And the only way you're going to stay on the air is for them to support your sponsors and your events. And hopefully that's one thing about wrestling fans. They're all very, very loyal.
Yes,
and
they
I know that they're going to support you, and we appreciate your opportunity, the opportunity to work with you.
Well, I'm looking forward to a long relationship with WCW, and hopefully we can keep cooperating with each other.
Okay,
looking
John.
Forward to that. Thanks, Jim.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good night.
You know, somebody brought up the Papa Shango angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be revisionist. I remember we talked about this a little last week. That was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that Bill Watts said on TV was, you know, that our competition is a macabre cartoon. And I don't know anybody that didn't go, hey, that's right, go Bill Watts. I don't know anybody who appreciated the Papa Shango. I remember I was at an arena and hearing the boos for that stuff. I mean, it's just, I don't think it went over all that well.
No. No, it was getting too, it was cartoonish as it was, but that was just kind of really over the top. Just horrible, and that character alone was horrible, and it was just so unbelievable. And then the Warrior, and it was just, it sucked.
It did. Remember, the lights would go out, and his opponent's feet would be on fire on one episode.
I know.
And another one, the guy's hand lit on fire magically. It was like magic trick night.
Hey, and that was kind of a little dull in comparison to what they did last year. When the Fiend went up on fire, and you know he burned to a crisp in the middle of the ring. So, you know, Bray Wyatt. I mean, so they're still doing this crazy shit.
I think the worst thing that happened to the Bray Wyatt character was the pandemic, because the pandemic gave the WWE a new way of filming their matches and presenting their matches. They could post-produce things.
There were no
fans. So they were making them, you know, piecemeal matches with pieces, a piece of that. Alexa Bliss versus Randy Orton, where, you know, stuff was falling out of the ceiling, light stanchions and stuff like that. And it was like, it was pure desperation because they were trying to keep people's attention at that point. You could tell when it's a down period when they do angles like Bray Wyatt and Papa Shango. There's no question about it.
Yep, and we'll see where it goes from here. But as we take a look back to 1992, great episode, Bob. Really good one. You know, Jim Ross was super to be on.
He was just great. Just, you know, he's a nice man too. And I wish him continued health and continued success.
Yes.
I really do.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to him and Tony Schiavone on the AEW broadcast, and it's nostalgic in some respects, but in other ways, it's really good because they're kind of two of the legends of the business, and especially Jim Ross. And, you know, you hear that it's Wednesday night, you know what that means. And it's wrestling. So, I mean, we wish him continued success, and it was really an honor to have him on the show all those years ago. And we're just happy that this show is now in the books and things are good. And Jay, you learned anything new from listening to Jim Ross from 30 years ago?
Well, I learned that Jim Ross had no idea how big he was really going to become after that. You know, when he spoke of, I don't know where I'm going to be 10 years from now. Well, guess what, pal? You're going to be the biggest announcer probably in the history of wrestling, eventually going on to be that. Perhaps not the greatest, but definitely the most renowned. I would say, since it was his voice that carried us through the Attitude Era, which was, of course, the most popular era in the history of wrestling. It's funny you spoke about Jesse Ventura too. Oh, by the way, Jim, he's just going to become the governor of Minnesota. So you can you imagine going back in time and telling Jim Ross these things? He said, what?
Yeah.
And Cactus Jack would become one of the biggest names also in the history of wrestling, going on to become Mankind, of course, and Mick Foley.
The hardcore legend. Mick Foley's still out there.
It's fantastic, and it made me think of, you know, you speak about Tony Schiavone as well. You know, one of the things that during that era, the very early part where WCW, with the introduction of the NWO during the Attitude Era, one of the things that carried us through that and that helped with the storytelling was Tony Schiavone. When he was with the WWF at the time, we didn't really, you know, he's kind of like a reporter. He didn't do much play-by-play, and we didn't realize how talented he really was until he went over to WCW, and he really just knew how to tell a story. I thought he was such a great announcer, and now to have them both in AEW, when it comes to, you know, AEW has a lot of great talent as well, but when it comes to announcers, they're far, far ahead of the WWE at this point, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah,
so it made me think back of some of the greatest announcers of all time, and my favorite ever, of course, because I grew up with him, was Gorilla Monsoon, with either Bobby Heenan or Jesse Ventura, either one. It was always fantastic to listen to those guys.
Yeah, Monsoon was really cool, and Bobby was just unforgettable. I mean, with his one-liners and the things that he used to come out with, and Jesse, of course, one of the best heel announcers in the history of pro wrestling.
Only Bobby Heenan could make you hate him and make you laugh at the same time the way he did. Yeah. It's a hard skill. It really is. He was great. He was one of the best light heavyweight wrestlers I ever watched.
Oh, yeah. What bumps this guy used to take.
He could really go.
Even as a manager, he would take the bumps. You know, you'd have Hulk Hogan throwing him all over the steel cage. You know, we couldn't believe it. You know, I remember watching that with my father. And he'd say, my God, this guy. And I had to tell my father, no, he used to wrestle, too, back in the 70s. He doesn't anymore, but he was still taking bumps. He was flying all over the place. He doesn't, you know, if anybody didn't look like an athlete, it was Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Used to bounce. He bounced like two or three times when he took a bump. It was
phenomenal. As famous as he was in the AWA before he came to the WWF, people forget his stint in Indianapolis, the WWA, you know, he carried that promotion. They hated his guts. They really hated Bobby Heenan in Indianapolis, and those matches, a lot of those are on YouTube now. They're well worth checking out because, oh my gosh, there's one match with Bruiser and Crusher and little
Bruiser. Yes.
I guess the Blackjacks and Bobby Heenan.
Yes, that's a classic one.
That's a great match, my gosh.
It's a great match, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was very cool.
And can you imagine, talk about a five-tool player, Bobby Heenan. That's what I was saying about his announcing. My friends and I, 30, 35 years later, still repeat some of his lines that he was saying back in the 80s and 90s. Like when Shawn Michaels turned on Marty Jannetty finally with that kick through the barbershop window. And Bobby Heenan yells, did you see Marty Jannetty jump out the window? What an act of cowardice. to this day, we still repeat it. I remember when Bob Backlund had come back in that Royal Rumble. Do you guys remember that? I think it was 93 Royal Rumble. Bob Backlund had come back. We hadn't seen him in a long time. And he was lasting a long time. And at one point, Bobby Heenan says, call for your paw, Opie. And Monsoon looks at him and says, stop it. I'm going to knock you out. And I'll never forget it. It's just such great announcing, just sticks with you. And this stuff, when I heard when I was very, very young, and to this day, I can remember it verbatim, you know, the things they used to say.
Great chemistry on that primetime wrestling show that was on the air so many years ago. And they had great, great chemistry. Well, guys, I think this was a good chemistry show between all of us and Jim Ross. And we're going to get a chance to do it again next week because we're going to have Cactus Jack on the show. And Alex Marvez, who was with the Miami Herald at the time. And so we'll be covering that show, which is from June the 7th, 1992, with Cactus and Alex. And then in 2 weeks, we have a very special episode from June 14th, 1992. It is a live remote broadcast from Scores, and it features Missy Hyatt, Jason Hervey, Sean Waltman, who at the time was the 1-2-3. Well, he was a Lightning kid at the time, and Alex Marvez joins us as well. And so we have a couple of really good ones coming up. So keep it where it is, where, you know, subscribe to this podcast and make sure when you listen to it, you especially if it's on Apple, give it a 5-star review and write a little review about us. And we really appreciate it. That really helps us. So, guys, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Jay. We'll wrap up this edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and we'll talk to you guys next week. I just want to remind everybody, you can join our private group at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast and Radio Show. You can always leave your comments there. If you want us to answer anything, leave your opinions, leave your comments. We'll be more than happy to address those right here on the podcast. We have a public page that's doing really well on Facebook, John Arizzi's Matt Memories. We have a YouTube channel as well. So go to youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight there on social media. Follow me on Twitter at John Arizzi, Instagram at John Arizzi as well. And I've sold a few books in the last week as well. So if you would like a signed and numbered copy of my memoir, Matt Memories, My Wild Life in Pro Wrestling, Country Music, and with the Mets, just send an email to john@mattmemories.com or go to amazon.com and pick it up there. Don't forget to check out the sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, covering all the shows I covered from the Mecca of all arenas 50 years ago. And we're covering that May 22nd, 1972 show with Pampero Firpo against Pedro Morales on the episode that's being dropped probably by the time you hear this show. So check it out wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, co-hosted by Tim Poutre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast is a production of Matt Memories, LLC. Our co-host is Bob Smith. Our editor is Jay Farrar. We want to thank our Patreon executive producer, Jeremy Priest, and all the patrons for your support for the production of this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you with special guests, Cactus Jack and Alex Marvez. This is John Arizzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.